to call this meeting of the Riders Advisory Council for February to order. First on our agenda is our public comment period. John, do we have anybody on the list for public comment tonight?
We have Drew Hunter signed up.
All right. Drew, the floor is yours.
Hi, guys. I brought the momentum papers. It's 50 pages. That's on the WATMA website. It was brought to my attention after the latest Green Line meltdown. And on it, on page 2, I'm sure you've read it, is expect the unexpected. Metro will continue to support the region's emergency transit management and security readiness protocols and seek to make transit emergency protocols widely and easily understood. Metro will maintain regional evacuation capabilities and prepare for any event that requires wide-scale response. On a smaller scale, Metro will continue to improve the incident response timing, planning, preparation, and investigation. It sounds to me Metro is not following its own advice, which brings me to 2 requests of this committee. 1, I'm asking you on behalf of the ridership to ask the NTSB to do a full investigation of the last 4 major incidents, the 2 Green Line meltdowns, which required self-evacuations, the Red Line meltdown this past summer, and more importantly, the system-wide meltdown in I think it was June or July, caused by a computer, we think. We don't know. Which brings me to the 2nd point. Metro, and especially their spokesman, Dan Stessel, is very, very untrustworthy. I'm asking the board, on behalf of the ridership, to ask for his resignation or his immediate termination. He has become ultimately a liar. I would not trust him. If he said to go right, I would go left. He blames the ridership. He blames emergency personnel. He blames the power company. He blames people logging into the system. It's never on Metro. If you want to start with a credibility factor, start with him. He needs to go. He needs to go soon. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other members sign up for public comment? Nope. Seeing none. Our next agenda item is approval of the agenda. Someone going to move that? Thank you. Thais. So you have a second?
Second.
Thank you very much. Any debate on the agenda? Anyone want to close debate on the agenda?
Move to close.
Thank you very much. So the motion is to close debate on the agenda. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Debate on the agenda is closed. Now we'll move straight to a vote on the agenda itself. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Thank you very much. All right, we do not have minutes to approve. Please note this, Madam Vice Chair. So we're going to move straight to item number 5, the track work discussion. And we have the honor to invite Mr. Kubitschek to talk to us.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Dave Kubitschek. I'm the Deputy General Manager for Operations. And I was requested to come in and talk about track rights, you know, the work, the schedules and everything else. So what I wanted to do is I just wanted to point out this is the presentation that we gave to the board. It's also the schedule that we, you know, post online. Basically, what we're trying to do here is provide a look ahead. Whenever I got here probably about 6 years ago, track work really kind of consisted of maybe about 1 or 2 weeks notification. And, you know, it's still a big challenge. And so one of the things that we're looking at with our investments and with us trying to get the to continue to sustain the state of good repair and advance a lot of projects, planning and everything else is very, very important. So one of the things as we view is that our biggest stakeholder is naturally our customers. We fully understand it is an inconvenience. We do apologize. Because we know it's an inconvenience. If but it's a necessary action that we must undertake to keep this system in good repair. For example, we completed the NTSB recommendations as far as guarded number eights. You know, it's about safety. We've completed the train control modules on the red line. Now we're moving over into the orange and the blue line. These are types of outages. The type of work that we're doing, it's related to replacement of rail, it's replacement of stud bolts, it's replacement of insulators. It is not easy or quick work that we're undertaking. So the methodology on this is, as we've kind of evolved, is that we have basically identified weekends. There are certain periods, though, that we do, you know, cancel work. For example, during the cherry blossom season, there's, you know, 3 weeks where we were basically free of the railroad, especially on the weekends, knowing that there's a lot of activity. 4th of July, you know, we were free of that area. Thanksgiving week, Christmas week, into New Year's and such, we really stay away from those areas. And so with our forecasting, what we're working off of, we typically are able to push out about 6 months. And our single track efforts, they're probably, that's one of the next phases that we're looking at, is what is the least disruptive approach? Is it shutdowns altogether and just bus around it? Or is it single track, you know, type work? Because due to the protocol, it takes us so many hours to get everybody in place and to conduct the work. And then, for example, if we're pouring concrete or if we're doing steel, while you have those windows, you have to be able to let it cure and reestablish everything in place. So it's kind of like building a house while you're living in it, which, you know, everybody wants all the amenities and stuff, you know, present there at the same time. One of the things that we have done as we've worked over this is that hopefully if you do use the system on a regular basis is daytime work. You really haven't seen any daytime work within the last 6 to 8 months. And one of the things as we looked at it from a cost model and also disruption, realistically when we cut out of peak service during the daytime or in the morning time by 9 or 10 o'clock, we try to rush to get people out there. You've got all these other inspections and stuff that are taking place. Establish a single track. Then you have to be back off the railroad at 2 or 3 o'clock. So we're really only getting maybe 2 or 3 hours worth of work. And it takes so long to get everything ramped up and ramped back down. We just said, you know, let's step away from that and let's focus on AM peak, off-peak day, and PM peak, or those are the periods where we really try to stay clear of the railroad and really let people, you know, utilize it, you know, full services. You know, you are seeing a little bit where we're in the outer areas where we might start shutting down like at 8 o'clock and start doing single tracking and stuff, but we're really trying to stay outside of the core. I would also say another challenging thing, it's a blessing and it's also a very tough thing to work around. The region has so many events that take place. Verizon Center, it seems like there's, you know, between the hockey and the basketball and the concerts and the university activities, the horse show and stuff, there's always something taking place. You've got the ballpark, which is another, you know, a big driver. And then we have all these activities that take place during the weekend and also even out at RFK, even though it's not really, it's not sustained, you know, with the football and stuff. It's amazing the amount of activities that take place off to the side. And that was also one of the things that we've also tried to do, and the importance of this list is also when we publish this, some of the work that has also taken place, it might not be just ours. We're working with the District of Columbia, for example. They've got a lot of projects. People have been on the New York Avenue area. You know, they're widening the bridge, they're driving that and everything else. And so what we're trying to do is while they're there needing to do their work on our right-of-way because we've got to shut it down because we just simply can't get the equipment in there, we're trying to address and stack working as well. We worked very closely with the Virginia Department of Transportation for those down on the blue line with all the new crossovers and stuff that's taking place, and the same thing with Maryland. Also, we have to work with a lot of our utility providers as well because they're in a state of, you know, PEPCO has been in the process of upgrading a lot of their infrastructure. Well, whenever they upgrade a lot of this massive infrastructure, utility fees and everything else, it also has an impact on our railroad as well. So the one thing that I I've done a couple of these discussions and stuff beforehand. We want to really stress that, again, we recognize the inconvenience and we do apologize, and it's not an easy task, but for the sake of sustaining a system, growing it, making sure that it is safe for everybody to operate, it is just something that we have to undertake. Also, I've asked several times and brought it up in discussions, if there is another venue that we should be communicating to the public on our outages, so that way everybody's in the loop, you know, please let us know. I don't know if for those that ride the system, you see the new LCD screens at all the station kiosks. Our communications department, you know, we do banners, in-station announcements. There's social media, you know, venues like Twitter and, you know, YouTube or whatever, our website, call center recordings, you know, community briefings and such, newspaper advertisement, radio stuff. And, for example, one of the things when the new 7000 series rail car, you know, gets here towards the end of the year and we start introducing this new fleet of rail cars, one of the things it's going to have inside of it is going to be an LCD screen, and we're going to troll advertisement or notification and stuff, and that'll be another venue that we'll be able to add towards as a customer is physically inside the car and stuff during their commute and stuff. There'll be information, you know, about upcoming events and stuff of what's taking place, and so that's going to be yet another approach for us to communicate to our customers. So, you know, with that, I'm open for any questions or comments.
Before we go there, could you maybe address the incident on the Green Line that happened last week just briefly?
At
this
time,
I'm sure you're going to get some questions on that. Maybe
I was going to say, at this time, it's under investigation, and the investigation is not complete, and I will not be in a position to comment at this time. But I do know that we will be providing a briefing on it next week.
Can you talk a little bit about what happened rather than judging the cause? We do know that. I know that they put out a statement on that, at least.
I would say at this time, it's best for me just to let the investigation and the review and stuff, you know, take place. It's definitely an incident that we do not like to see occur. It's something that has occurred. And with that, I would just assume let the review and investigation complete it so that way we present all the facts.
Is the investigation going to be made public, the results of that?
We will be briefing the board, so it'll be opened up to a public forum next week.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, so I'm assuming that everybody pretty much is going to have a question on this, so I'm just going to start with Barbara here and go around, and if you don't have anything to say or any questions, just take a pass. But we're going to give 2 minutes for each person.
I'm not going to take my 2 minutes. I don't have questions, but because almost, I'd say half of our board here, or half of our council is new, that I don't think heard your presentation before, I just want to say that I'm one of the many people that absolutely hates what happens on the weekends when we have the track work. But after hearing you talk and hearing what has to go into it and all my simplistic ideas, like why don't you just do it at night, hearing then that you need 3 days, I mean, I had a tremendously better understanding of what you're dealing with, and I understand that. And also was shocked that when you gave a list of all the ways you communicated what was coming up, but I still didn't often hear about them, I thought I didn't have anything to add because it was a really long list. So I want to thank you for that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Tricia, pass.
Hi, thanks for joining us tonight. As well, I'm severely annoyed about the track work, but I also do know what goes into it, and that takes a lot of time. I know other people have brought up the fact of making like a time schedule. I think that would help, like a timetable of instead of going there and seeing, oh, I have 30 minutes to wait, but knowing in advance the next train's going to come at 5:30 p.m. That way you can plan around it better. Also, what you touched on about you said, I'm sorry, we know it's frustrating for you all. I think everyone is frustrated with Metro, and I think everyone understands that. I feel like this is uncomfortably loud. But I think one great way that won't cost any money and will also help the riders would be if Metro just said that. I know you guys say when there'll be track work and things like that, but if I saw more ads saying, we thank you for riding Metro, we are sorry that you have to go into this inconvenience, we're riders too, but to try and get a little bit more personal, because obviously we're going to have to deal with this for a while, but just as long as Metro could communicate that they're aware that it's annoying to people, I feel like that would help ease the pain of waiting around.
Can I ask? Is there a specific venue that's better than others for us to really reach out and to communicate?
Well, no, I don't mean that you guys aren't reaching out enough, but I just don't think that message is the message that is being distributed. It's more like the track work, which is all valid messages, but I think that maybe some sort of campaign to reach out to riders. Obviously, all these riders that got stuck on the Green Line, they all had to pay. So, I mean, that's really frustrating to think that you just had to pay $7, however much money, and you're waiting around. So I feel like if the least that Metro could do is just say, we're really sorry, we're riders too, we feel your pain. I mean, it's the least. It doesn't cost anything. Well, I mean, to print the stuff, but I just think that would help.
All right, very warned. Thank you.
Hi, good evening. How are you? Just a couple comments first, I think. With respect to the communication, I actually think Metro's come a long way in that respect, and I think you're doing a pretty good job, both in terms of keeping people informed in using different media to do it, and starting to try to spread a more positive message, which is important. I would like to echo something that Kara just said, which I think is important. This is my opinion, but if I'm taking twice the amount of time that I need to get somewhere, and you never know when things are going to be single track because it happens so often that you can't even really keep track of it anymore, you really shouldn't have to pay. You really shouldn't. And why Metro doesn't do that or make more of an effort to make sure that people are getting reimbursed, or at least, you know, if I arrive in Rockville at 10 o'clock at night and I was supposed to get home at 9 p.m., let me walk out the fare gate and not have to pay. I mean, I think that's a huge problem. I also, just a question that I would have to ask you is, if you could boil it down to, I don't know, maybe three things, what is the problem? Where are we going wrong here? Because we're falling behind. I mean, our public transportation system is way behind. And every public transportation system in the world has problems with maintenance and upkeep and the lateness of trains and things like that. And it's a reality. It's something that we all have to deal with. Mm-hmm. But there's a problem when things have gone from bad to worse to worse to worse to worse here in the Washington, D.C. area. And I haven't seen that in other public transportation systems, either in the United States or particularly around the world. And I understand that our Metro's old, that it needs to be replaced. But what is the problem? Because maybe we need to start lobbying our elected leaders, our elected officials, to make progress in other areas.
I can provide a perspective again. Walking in here, from another transit authority, I've worked in Texas and California. So, you know, I was brought in with a little bit different perspective. The mindset over the years was, we've got to keep running service all the time, regardless. It's brand new. Everybody thinks that it's a state of the art, which at the time it was built, yes, it was state of the art. But it's no different than buying an automobile or a house. You can live in it. The minute that you buy it, stuff starts happening. And, you know, you get a certain period. One of the things that's been communicated is about the underinvestment and the backlog of what we're facing at this time. I think the other thing that's also very remarkable about this system, especially when I speak with staff that's been here for, you know, 20 or 30 years, a lot of people reference the good old days, which they're a great time, but that we're running two-car trains and you're running four-car trains. Now you're looking at six-car trains and eight-car trains. We are doing things from a power perspective, track perspective. We're pushing the envelope of a lot of industry standards. And, for example, one of the things that's also it's very frustrating on my part is with us until such time that we have to have 1,000 series that are bellied. You know, that car is 35 years. It was built to the best of its ability at that time, but it does not have the technology and it does not have the platform, and that creates a lot of service delays because we've got a rail car that's a 6000 series, and then in the middle you've got a 1000 series that's 35 years old, and then you've got something else on the end. And so there's a lot of technology and stuff out there that would make it a lot better. I mean, that's why we have been talking about, like, with the 7000 series. It's a standalone fleet. I mean, it is it's got technology on it that will compete with anybody in the United States and across the world. I mean, it's really built on a platform where if you travel abroad, you're going to see some things inside this car. You're going to go, oh, wow, I didn't know we could do this. And, like, on my part, I never in my life would have thought that I would have to debate changing out carpet and putting in a resilient floor, you know, because for me it's costly, it's unsightly. I don't know how y'all feel about it, but I don't think it's the most sanitary thing to use in a public environment with the duty cycle that we use in that area. So I do think that there's a lot of effort. Unfortunately, you know, everybody wants it now, and we would love to get it now. But I do think that as we continue to move forward, there's the right steps are being made. I mean, who would have ever thought that we would have had to debate about flooring or surface platforms where when it gets wet, it's so slick. And now we're, you know, changing out the decking and stuff with a more coarse, porous product that gives us, you know, better footing and everything else. You know, for whatever reason, that was not done or addressed. And again, when it was built, that was the best that the industry and stuff had. But now the system has grown, and so we really have to adjust our strategy on handling hundreds of thousands of people. It's a big difference between handling 200,000 versus now we're handling, you know, 600,000, 700,000, 800,000. And I'll share an interesting item on my part that I do here as well. I watch how many riders are in the system in an hour because, you know, there's a system design capacity, and that's what Momentum and stuff has talked about. We have days right now where we might get during the peak periods and everything else that we have over 100,000 people in the system at one time. You know, that is if you think about it, that is a lot of people. That's cities that is being managed in a 106-mile railroad. And so the accuracy and the pinpoint that we have to work off of, it's raising the expectation because that's what this system is going to need. And whenever we go out to Dulles, that's going to present, you know, another layer of integration and stuff into the system. So I'll leave it at that.
Thank you. Carl?
Thanks for coming. We always appreciate your willingness to come and visit. So thank you. I think I have one recommendation, then just a short comment. I think everything Metro can do to tie tangible improvements to closures is helpful. Saying we're on switch 3 of 6 in Judiciary Square, 3 more weekends, and this one's done. I think that's helpful for people. While most people don't understand transit or construction lexicon, I think most people are able to understand the progress. And you mentioned, I think, last time you visited us, that we have 2 or 3 years of fairly heavy continued operation or deferred maintenance track work to catch up on. Mm-hmm. And I think boiling that down to manageable slices and conveying what a closure means to that specific larger goal would be very helpful, you know. Mm-hmm. The other thing I'd mention, very glad, I think all riders are glad that an investigation is ongoing on the Green Line. The only comment I was going to make on that was because, I'm sure you remember the incident communications panel in, I believe it was October, where we had the RAC and members of Metro and local jurisdictions sitting around. And I posed one question that frustrates riders more than anything, which is, who's in charge? And at that panel, there were many answers about, yes, there is a procedure in place, there is always someone in charge. And if you look at the news reports and firsthand accounts of the incident, last week, I guess, everyone, whether on a train, in a station, waiting on the street at Navy Yard, said it was not clear at all who was in charge. So I guess my encouragement would be, in the interest of continuing to operate the system as safely as possible, Certainly hope the investigation tries to boil down what led to that running awry, because, you know, I think riders want to feel safe and they need direction. And without direction, they'll do things that no one can predict, like get out of a train car and walk down a tunnel. And when that's the better option compared to staying there, that's a, you know, a frightening prospect that hopefully we don't have to look at. So we appreciate you guys looking into the investigation. I think riders very much appreciate Metro's expression that things did not work and you're going to fix them. So thank you.
Thank you.
Rain?
Good evening. I just want to go back to your previous presentation when we were talking about track work and the whole thing about the three-day weekends. And at some point at the end of the presentation, you said that it had been suggested before that instead of working the three-day, just to do the two-day as opposed to work on the legal holiday, I mean, the legal holiday, that it's still a work day for a whole slew of other people. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to know if, when you said that it had been suggested, it had, and I mean, what was the, has anybody thought about it? Has been any recommendations?
Oh, absolutely.
Or studied the situation?
I mean, I would say that, you know, Veterans Day was the day that we really had a lot of folks that was active in such in the region. And if you notice, you don't see a report out on that yet, because that's one of the areas that we're going to be looking at and adjusting. Now, I might come back and say, hey, I need another weekend shutdown because I'm going to shut that down. But we do recognize the threshold of moving 200,000 or 300,000 or 400,000 people in a day versus whenever you're 500,000 plus. We have to take that into account. I think the other component that we, as we work with our media relations folks, is also to have an idea of what's going on in the region. And again, that's why we publish this, so that way we kind of get feedback, because there's a lot of things that happen out there in the region that we're just, you know, we're just not aware of. It is being reviewed very seriously, because we do not, the last thing we want to do is try to create an incident on something that just inconveniences people more so than what we're having to do. But I will say, again, the work that we're doing, it's so very important because of the safety of the integrity of what we're doing here to operate on the system. You know, that is so paramount. So
I just brought it up because President's Day is coming up. But I also wanted to say...
Your time's up, actually. Mm-hmm. Okay. Move on.
Well, so much for the Spanish-speaking people.
Okay. Dan?
Yes, I wanted to say, I missed the presentation because I'm new here, so I didn't see your first presentation, but I am one of the folks who are usually annoyed when I do see, you know, a delay because of track work. But is there any way there could be information outside of the station that lets you know to not even go down the steps? You might want to go to a coffee shop across the street if you see that there's the next train is in 30 minutes. So I know you named all those communication devices that you have available, but to just have the information on the outside of the stadium, or station rather, would help save a few steps, first of all, or just give you another option. You could walk to another station that may not be on the same line from wherever you are if you can see it before you even enter the station.
Well, since you brought that up, what is viewed as acceptable notification outside of the station? Is it a placard? Is it one of these A-frame stands? That's where I would look for y'all's assistance to kind of tell me what would be the most noticeable, or the best process for that. And, for example, one of the things that we are looking at, and it's also talked about a little bit on momentum and everything else, one of the things is, as we look at this, we look at this environment here, we're looking at the kind of a wayfinding and to get around and navigate the system towards, you know, not everybody has a PDA, okay? So you need to provide amenities along the way. And one of the philosophies that I'm challenging our engineers and our maintenance staff is, okay, I'm in the train, we're doing X. I'm on the platform, we're doing Y. I'm at a certain mes, we're doing Z. Okay, I'm in the unpaid area, we're doing A. Okay, I'm in the paid area, just entered, we're B. We're at street level, we're at C. So we are having those discussions across the board as we start looking at the investments and looking at it to advance our products and everything else, because everybody's time is very precious, and we want it to be as uneventful trip as possible, so that way you get from point A to point B. But if there are some suggestions, you know, if you tell me an A-frame is acceptable, or maybe we can test or pilot something, I'm open for that. And I know our customer service group and support folks, they would support me as well in trying some different stuff, because we are going to be doing this. So I'd welcome feedback on that.
Okay. Thank you. Karen?
Again, thanks so much for coming and giving the council an update. I have a really quick question. You mentioned that your office has completed the NTSB recommendations related to track work and maintenance. And I wanted to know what completed means. Does that mean that NTSB has closed those recommendations acceptable? Or, you know, if you could just elaborate on that a little bit.
As it relates to the garden number eights, which was a recommendation, we have installed everything on the main line that was mandated. The NTSB, we submit all of our information. Again, they have a lot of lot of work throughout, and sometimes their responses do take a little while to get back. But based on, you know, informal discussions and stuff, I think we're in good shape. We're waiting for the final paperwork. I can say that I can take you to every switch and say, here's a guarded number eight. But we still hold it open until we get a actual letter, you know, from the NTSB, you know, documented. And we do track this on a per project basis. And just like with the train control stuff, well, we, you know, we replaced everything on the red line, but we've communicated that we still have on the orange, the blue, and the yellow, and the green. And so they've recognized the program and the project and stuff. And also, you can go to the NTSB website, and you can pull up WMATA, and it'll let you know where we're at. And we work off of the same information that's posted there.
Thank you.
Patrick?
Thank you for I'm the new Patrick. Thank you for joining us and sharing that. I am one of the new people that to which Barbara was referring. And I am pleased to be able to kind of get the backstory on not only what track work you're doing, but why you're doing the track work. One thing I might add to what Carl said is that, you know, people understand that you've got to maintain the system. Riders understand that you've got to maintain the system. But I think you guys are doing a great job of telling people when and where there will be track work. But I wonder if a better job of informing them why the track work is needed. You know, I think people do, there is a level of understanding there that the system needs to be maintained, and giving them even small bites of information that say, okay, well, we've got to do this to this stretch or this during this weekend may go a longer way to really getting people to understand why there are the delays.
To that point, would like a before and after type of approach kind of help, maybe, toward we take a picture of X and we go in and we've done the work and this is the end product?
That may accomplish, yes, what Carl brought up in terms of
to kind of keep people educated on the type of work and stuff that we do. We take a lot of pictures internally, so I mean, okay, thank you.
Yes.
I think since you're in a very Type A city, people like to know, like, okay, this is what happened before. This is the end result. That's just the way people operate here. Sometimes it's slightly annoying, but that's the way it is. I'm going to sort of piggyback on what Lorraine said. Have you guys come up with a plan for, like, these working holidays that we do have? Like, President's Day is coming up. You will have a large number of people working on the actual holiday. Federal government most likely isn't working, and I know a lot of times your service is based on, you know, federal employees versus private employees. So I know that, for example, in my line of work, most of us will be working on President's Day. And I know that when it comes to track work, I think the issue that I normally have is I don't normally take the actual metro, I take the bus. But I think that if people knew that they had the option to take the bus instead of maybe taking the metro, they would. But I think a lot of people get downstairs, they walk through, and they think, okay, this is my only option. I have to stand here and wait for half an hour. Whereas if you maybe had a sheet to say, okay, you're in this location, you can take this bus into downtown or something like that, it may also be helpful. So just to give people additional options so that they say, so that they're not, they don't feel like they're stuck.
Okay.
Yeah.
I will say one thing that as we look at this, we'll look definitely look at like the core versus the outlying areas as well, because where we have the lines where we, the yellow, the green, and the blue, and the orange, once we get those dual lines and stuff shared together, it's one of the things that we're stepping back to make sure that we kind of stay away from that activity there during these other holidays like that. And if we do some work, we're trying to look to push it out in the outer area. It also makes it easier for our bus service, for example, because it's very hard for them to navigate down in the city and everything else. They do a great job, but there's a lot of other folks around here. And so if it's kind of in the outlying areas and stuff, they tend to have a little bit better job of providing a service as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Fred? So I have a question about the communication. So I've seen all the kiosk that you've put up, and so I have to say my sample is two places, Foggy Bottom and Vienna. And it strikes me that you like sub-optimize the location. You put it where it was convenient, but not where people could see it. The one in Vienna especially is almost invisible to riders, I think. And the problem is before you put the kiosk up, you had really great signs about when track work was going on, and now, because you have the invisible kiosk, pretty much. I mean, is there anybody looking to see if these are really in good spots and maybe they could be relocated to where people might see them?
As far as the LCD screens that
were
installed? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we can look into it. The reason why we put them at the kiosk originally is because that's where a lot of customers and stuff kind of migrate, you know, towards. One of the things I was talking about earlier, for example, is, you know, if there's different signage and stuff for us to run some type of other test pilot and stuff, that would be, you know, very, very helpful. I do see in the future, but not in the immediate future, of there's got to be the next evolution of wayfinding here at this system. Some of these decals have been here, you know, for a few decades. And it's probably time to refresh them to make them more usable for everybody.
So anyway, in Vienna especially, there's way better places than the one you have. It's where people would actually see it. It's not for these are for people who go every day.
Mm-hmm.
They need to see them, not the people who wander up to your employee.
Do you use north or south entrance?
I use the south entrance.
Okay, where would be a good place?
Right where people come out.
Okay.
On the wall, there's a wall, and everybody has to, there's actually a sign up there on the wall right now that everybody looks at.
Okay.
But where it is now, you can hardly see it. And then Foggy Bottom, it's the same thing. When you come out, you can't see it any place.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hello, again, thank you for coming. I have two issues, and I think a lot of people discuss this. One is the signage, and yes, those A-frame stands would help. I got on the State of Monterey stop the Thursday before that station was going to be closed, and it was nothing. There was a little sign in the station manager's kiosk that said this station is closed. So it has to be more consistency about when the station is going to be closed. And the second thing, when you have the five preceding stations closed, that's
closer to you, actually.
Oh, put it closer. When you have the five preceding stations closed, it should actually be a bigger announcement that said it will add time. When you get on that shuttle bus that started at Federal Central Southwest, you know, to get from Federal Central Southwest, Center Southwest, to Stadium Armory, 2 hours. That's a crazy amount, and it's a logistical nightmare for the drivers. I don't know what the bus route. And I one suggestion someone made to me is that they should have some express buses, too. If you get on at the first closed station, there should be express bus to the first open station. Your buses go through each station to the end, which is, you know, which adds more time, and you don't account for that. You say add 40 minutes to your time. Crazy. When they closed Willine Avenue Station and they had a shuttle bus just to Union Station, it took me an hour and a half to go one stop on the bus because that bus went across New York Avenue. It stopped at Gallaudet, No Ma now they call it, and then went to Union Station, and that seems ridiculous. So you should have some express buses, this is for our riders, and some ones that are going to stop at each of the stations along the way.
So similar like what the bus service does now, like an express and a local?
Yes.
And basically,
yes,
so
when you have five station calls,
yeah. Okay.
Absolutely.
It's okay. So basically a point-to-point between, and then the other one where you're doing a local everywhere.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I can double check with them to see how they work up. That seems very, you know, very reasonable.
Okay. Thank you.
Hello.
Hello.
My main metro stop is Chinatown Gallery Place, so I'm a downtown resident, though I use the metro extensively all over the community. I'm a real estate agent, and a good part of my business, actually, I do by metro. So I go into every stop. But that being said, you ask for opinions. From a downtown resident standpoint, there's a lot we can do with 30 minutes. And in fact, a lot of times our transportation on foot would only take 30 minutes. So a delay, knowing that before you enter the station is what's going to be most important at those particular stops. Mm-hmm. A delay like that creates a situation where people can make a lot of different decisions. Jump on the bus, grab a cab, go on foot, get a bike if you're a bike sharer. So giving us that opportunity, or grabbing that coffee across the street because you are in a dense urban environment. So that would be my. So the LCD screen is not helpful to me. I mean, I can only the one that you put up there, because as you go through that kiosk, you actually, for the regular users, maybe for the tourists, it's okay, but we move too fast. And not telling us what the amount of the delay is problematic. Just saying it's delayed, we don't know what that means.
Okay.
So the time, especially for the downtown, the time is what's important because it allows us to reroute.
So if I could, because this is also very important for me, because as we look at wayfinding and everything else, we look to improve this. We really should take an aggressive approach to basically look at signage that basically is in a path of traffic where you're actually moving. One of the things I would ask is, do the escalators, say for instance the headers of the escalators while you're riding down, is that viewed it very often?
I would personally I would rather hit an LCD screen before I took the first step onto the escalator.
Okay.
That early, and if I knew it was always there, I would, because I always look for the screens, but you know right now, because I have to move past those LCDs so fast, mm-hmm. I still go to the old screens that give all of the, where you have to wait for the scrolling. And here's the other thing that I would suggest, and since we've had a conversation, I'm over my time, so I'm going to take a little more. For the folks that are very much in need of knowing if an elevator's out or an escalator's out, that's going to be pretty much consistent. The folks that walk the stairs and are going to go, that are kind of the tougher among us, they're going to go up there, they're going to complain, but they're not looking for that information. They need the time. I don't know if it would be an improvement to always have that information in one spot in each station that was separate from the time information. Because you sit there and you just kind of stand and wait, and that the most important information about when the next train is going to come just never comes.
Okay. Well, we do know the passenger information displays that are on the platform. That's, for me, it's technology that's 20 or 30 years old,
yeah.
And we're really my part. It's part of the customer experience, and we really. At this stage, my travels abroad, I'm used to seeing stuff where it says, you know, 5 minutes, 4 minutes, and then it kind of gives you a countdown and everything else. And those are the things that we're talking and looking at, you know, moving forward to. It's got to be much more interactive.
Is there maybe a kiosk that you could create where someone could press a button for that station and it's like, oh, escalators are out at blah, blah, blah. Now they go in.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay. We are talking about some virtual stuff internally. So.
The other path.
Thank you. The fact that I can't move my microphone close to me, I don't know if that's a signal or whatever. You've done a good job in the past with this, and I just, particularly on the communication piece, when you're dealing with communication, make sure that it's going to be usable by people with disabilities too. I know you consulted with my committee in the past.
Absolutely.
And can you continue to do that? I just encourage that. So far, I think we've done a good job, and when we've had issues, they've been easily corrected, so that's good. So
we go to Mr. Kent, as you do, on a regular basis.
Right.
thank you.
Carol?
Yes, thank you. I just have a suggestion, at least for the District of Columbia, maybe more outreach. The District of Columbia has an Office of Latino Affairs, an Office of Religious Affairs, an Office of African Affairs, and others that I might not be aware of. And I would suggest outreach to those offices within the D.C. government directly so that they can get the information about upcoming track work out to their constituents. Thank you.
You got a particular person we should contact? It's a big city.
I'll let you know.
I appreciate that.
Okay. Thank you. I'll just have one quick comment from me. In terms of the LCD screens, as Thais mentioned, it's not, you know, having delay or on time, that doesn't really tell riders anything. What I would like to have is, and what I think you know, unlike on what's on the passenger information display screens, is where the next train is. Mm-hmm. Rather than giving me a time countdown, tell me that it's at Gallery Place, at Rhode Island Avenue. People who ride the system regularly, they know how far away that is. They can mentally calculate where that's coming.
Okay.
The other thing that LCD screens don't tell you is, it says on time for the red line, but it doesn't tell you which direction. If you break it down to red line eastbound, red line westbound, or Glenmont direction, or however, I think that would help riders a lot in terms of wayfinding and being able to figure out whether they should enter the station at all. And on the track work as a whole piece, I think the main question that riders have is, are we there yet? And I think the more Metro can do, as Carl said, to give us a percentage, give us a, you know, we're this close to being done with this station, this line, you know, have a chart that shows, you know, track work at Glenmont Station is 50% done or 10% done. Mm-hmm. That would help us a lot. And if you concentrate on certain lines, you know, we're going to get the red line done first, and then that one's clear or at the new normal, whatever that is. I think that would also help a lot.
Does this council get the capital update where we started talking about railroad ties and steel and everything else? I mean, from a percentage standpoint, how many we've done, production and stuff? Maybe that's something, John. When we talk with the board, we've integrated some stuff where we talked about this was how many railroad ties we planned to do. This is how many we actually did. This is how many miles of rail that we talked about doing. This is how many we're actually doing. So we are presenting that to the committees that I chair. So maybe what we could do is maybe share that as well and maybe get some feedback on what's taking place. But there's actuals that are being generated right now, because I know on my part, behind these actuals versus schedule is dollars. It's, are we keeping schedule? Are we ahead of schedule? Are we behind schedule? And my biggest thing is, if I'm behind schedule, I want to know why. Because this system is, with as many miles and stuff that we run on this thing and the duty cycle that we're putting it under, we've got to keep a very, very aggressive pace. So maybe we can get something like that circulating here as well, because it is being generated.
Right, and distilling that into a publicly messageable document or... Exactly. That's, I think, what we're looking for. Thank you so much for coming. We very much appreciate it. And
if
anyone has any follow-on information or any questions that you feel were unresolved, please give those to Carol. She has been appointed as our follow-up czar. So if you have any further questions, yes, Zarina. Yes.
I'm gonna count on that. I'm gonna look for a name in the district.
Oh, wait. I'm sorry. I did neglect to open it up for public comment. I'm very sorry about that. I should have done that at the beginning. You should have raised your hand at the beginning. Anyway, please.
Mr. Kubicek, thank you for coming tonight. Actually, Ben, my first point is one that you raised as well, which is an excellent one. As I'm sure you know, when trains are single tracking, the time predictions that come out of rocks are useless. I mean, they're really bad sometimes. And the PIDs and everything else that gets that data feed, they just go haywire. And I mean, as Ben said, if you were to release train position data as opposed to the time predictions, that would be a boon for app developers. And if you put that either on the PIDs or on the new LCD screens, that would really increase rider confidence, because actually knowing where a train is, that means a lot more than something that says, you know, 5 minutes and then 20 minutes and then 4 minutes. And I mean, you know how they really oscillate.
Yes.
And I know that, I mean, you know, I'm a software developer. I understand the problems there. And I'm not expecting that to get fixed. The time predictions are always going to be bad in that circumstance. But just if you can fix, or if you can just get the position data out there, that would help.
Okay.
And then the other thing is, as far as the LCD screens themselves, the London Underground electronic whiteboard, I don't know what they call it publicly, but internally they call it the electronic whiteboard, and then New York City Transit has something similar that they've been doing for about a year or two. The layout is just a little smoother than what we have here. I mean, I know this is the first iteration, but if you're looking at how to fix the layout of the LCD screens, if you look at some of the peer systems that have been doing that, yeah, they've got some really slick layouts.
Yeah. In all fairness, a lot of that project is definitely not 100% underneath our span of control. It's kind of a shared deal. Everybody has a little bit different views of how it should be set up. But I do know that it will advance in its platform, because I know on my part, on my travels abroad, I'm a customer as well. And so whenever I utilize these services, I'm just as dependent as the next person. And there's a lot of great things that are out there. But I do know that the upgrading of that and moving forward is heavily discussed, and there is progress being made.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other members of the hall? Yes.
I'd like to piggyback on Kara and Patrick and what you said about educating the public. Instead of using all the pictures, I suggest a short video. Show me, educate me. Show me your work. Show me why a switch fails, and how you replace it, and why you're replacing it, and how long it takes. You make a little short video, put it on YouTube, link it to your Twitter, send it out to everybody. This is why the Red Line is shut down, because we're doing switch work. Okay. You know, educate me. Educate me on, you've mentioned concrete and steel many, many times. I know about concrete, but probably the average person doesn't. Okay. Or tell me why it takes X amount of time to do this.
Okay.
All right. And, you know, you don't have to do the video for every, but, you know, say a year down the road, you make this video. We're doing the same thing we did on the Green Line as we did last year. Here's the link to the video. This is why it's taking so long. Don't use pictures. People are bored with pictures. Show me a video. You might even get a sponsorship for it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Time-lapse videos, are those helpful too?
Those help.
Because I think we released something beforehand on some construction, and we got a lot of hits and stuff where we were doing some tie-in work where we basically, I had staff, we filmed over a 48-hour period, and then basically they put it into like a minute clip or something. Yeah. Would that be helpful?
Yeah, and have somebody have a voiceover explain to the rider. If okay. I know why you're doing it, then I'm going to probably be on your side. But if I keep hearing about switches and, oh, we're doing this with the tie, I mean, show me what a tie is. Okay. I mean, I know what a tie is. I Googled it. okay, I've become a lot more educated, but because of my frustration level with you and the miscommunication and the, okay, you shut down everything, that's why I'm begging you to make these little videos and just make them once, but educate. Explain to me why. And then, you know, do the goal chart and all that fun stuff.
I do this. We create the video. What's the best way to get it out to the public?
Put it on YouTube.
YouTube?
Link it to your, put it on WATMA's front page.
Okay.
We're doing this. Put it on Twitter. You can link okay. it through your Twitter. Send it out. Send it to Washington Post. Send it to the Examiner. Send it to UNSUC. Send it to the RAC board.
Okay.
YouTube is an amazing tool.
Sure,
and,
sure.
And a two-minute video is not going to cost you that much. And I guarantee you're going to you want to win over the public. You want to win over me. Dang it. You want to win over me with the track work, because I can adjust my schedule on the weekdays or weekends. But when my boss says to come in on a Monday that's a holiday, yeah. I can't.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other members of the public interested in coming? All right. Thank you once
Thank
again.
Thank you. Have a great
Appreciate
evening.
Appreciate it. All right. Next item on our agenda is the Airport Accessibility Working Group. So I'm going to step out of my role as chair very quickly just to bring this to the floor, and then someone else will have to move it for me, and then I will step back into my role as chair. So this is a long time in coming. We started this report in February. we had some difficulty setting up meetings, getting everybody together, but eventually we did it, and you have the report in front of you. I'm assuming that everybody has at least received the report. Hopefully you've read at least part of it, or at least the executive summary of it. Basically what we found is, I came into this with a lot of conspiracy theories about airport transportation and how it works, how it doesn't work, especially about the Washington Flyer, how that works, how that doesn't work. I was disabused of some of those conspiracy theories, and I probably came up with a couple of new conspiracy theories along the way. But all in all, I think it's very interesting. I think we have here a report that has some very concrete suggestions in it about what to do for things like wayfinding, things like luggage on the buses, and various other issues, signage, and just looking at what needs to happen in order to improve these services for riders. So I guess I'll start off by just answering any questions anybody has, or if there's any, why don't I turn it over to Barbara here for a motion, first of all.
Well, appreciate all the work you've done. I move that we accept the report on the airport transportation report that Ben has provided us. Yes, I do move that we also publish it on the website, that we approve his report and publish it on the website.
I'll second that.
Okay. Any discussion, debate? Yes.
I read the report. I thought it was great. I did see one typo in the report. So another problem with it is there's no page number, so I can't say, oh, the typo's on page 2 or 3. So I think it would be useful to add page numbers to this document. Not the version that was emailed to me. This version has a,
but good
the
point.
Email version doesn't have any page
numbers. So do I hear you suggesting an amendment?
Yes.
Okay. So that amendment is to do page numbers, and where are the typo?
I have to pull my document out. Let's see. There was only one typo. It was really small, but.
Yes. Maybe you can offer that as a quote-unquote friendly amendment that we can accept later, assuming that the typos are non-substantive?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And another thing, I thought it would be useful to have the working group members listed on the report so we'll know who actually helped produce this document.
Okay. Okay. So that's been introduced as an amendment that we introduce page numbers into the document, correct various typos, and list the members who were involved in the production of the report. So now we'll debate that amendment. Any debate on that amendment? Anyone want to close debate on that amendment? All right, we have a motion to close debate. Thank you. All in favor of closing debate on the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Carol moved. Thais? Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. Seconded. All right. So we have approved the amendment. Any more debate on the question on the floor? Yes.
I'd like to at least ask a question. There were a lot of recommendations, but there's no prioritization. I'm not worried a lot if this report does it, but maybe in the future, or if we're going on in using this information, because everything looks equal.
That's a good point. Thank you. Any other debate? Questions? Motions to close debate, perhaps?
So moved.
Okay. Is there a second? Second. All in favor of closing debate on the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? All right, the motion passes. Thank you very much. Now, we have another piece of this, and I'm assuming, is it in the packet or not? Perhaps it's not.
What?
Do you have a page on that? Yeah, the op-eds. What page is it? 14. Oh, I see. That's why. Okay, one of the things that the leadership team discussed is that we're interested in getting out there a little more, expanding our reach, and advocating for riders more in sort of a public sense. So one of the goals that the leadership team has created for this year is that every month we're going to publish something. We're going to publish some sort of op-ed, some sort of opinion piece based on what we hear at the RAC in the previous month. So this is going to be the first of that effort, a three-part series that that I've asked Greater Washington to publish. And the idea is that we would sort of spread the wealth around a little bit, that we wouldn't stick to one particular blog or newspaper or what have you, that we wouldn't stick to one particular jurisdiction either, that we would spread the wealth around to Maryland, D.C., Virginia, as we are sort of an entire regional outlet here. So I've sort of distilled from this report three separate pieces that we would run on Greater Washington. And Barbara, I'll send it to you for the motion.
Yes, I would have done this earlier if I'd have seen these. I move that the op-ed pieces, there's three of them between pages 14 and I think it was 19 of our handouts, that we approve those to publish. Do I need to say anything else? No. I move that we approve the op-eds and publish.
Okay. Seconded by Salo. Thank you. Any debate on the motion? Yes.
I agree about doing something, but I think personally these documents need some rework. The middle one was closest for me in making a quick point. The others were a bit vague if you didn't know all the details of the issue. And so to me, should something be done, I'm in absolute agreement, but I think it needs some editing and focus, and again, maybe some prioritization of what's important before they go out.
Sure. I will say that this is the edited version, that this is the one that the editors of Greater Washington have already had their chop on. But point taken, thank you. Any other debate? Yes.
I do have just a quick question. What has the process of, you said that you guys were interested in spreading the wealth around, so to speak, between the jurisdictions. What efforts have gone into vetting various outlets or deciding those outlets? What has that process been like?
I think the best answer is there hasn't been a process so far. This is our first time out of the gate. And if there are any suggestions that people have as to appropriate media outlets, I think the leadership team is very much open to that. I mean, I know what's going on in Virginia in terms of, D.C. in terms of blogs and media outlets, but I have no idea in Virginia or Maryland. So I think we'll rely on members to make suggestions for that. Any other debate? Motions? Yeah.
When are these supposed to be published by Greater Washington?
That's a good question. Well, we would wait for the full report to be published on the website so it can then be linked to that. So once that's done, then they would be released. And the idea with Greater Washington is that they would release it sort of once a day over the period of about a week or so. So sort of a Monday, Wednesday, Friday kind of thing.
Okay. So like Ms. Zimmerman just spoke about, like if we felt that additional editing needed to happen, would we have time for that? Or is this pretty much a done deal now?
It depends on what the council decides tonight.
Okay.
If we vote to approve them, then they'll be ready to go. If not, if it's voted that further edits are needed, then we could do that.
Okay. So there's no date as of right now?
No.
Okay.
No. I mean, they've been proposed as this is, and they're ready sort of in the queue, ready to go. So if we approve them tonight, then yes, they would be published in relatively short order. If not, then the council would have to decide that.
Okay. And then after this, after we talk about sort of airport service and things like that, are we moving on then to another topic, or is this like an ongoing thing over the next few months, the next year?
Yeah, the idea would be that someone, a designated person, would take the results of the meeting, you know, what we heard tonight, put that into an op-ed that we would then vote on in the next meeting. Carl.
Can I just jump in with a piece of historical perspective? One thing that was very clear and made clear by the board in December was that they very much appreciated the work Patrick's committee did in producing a tangible report with specific recommendations on the station lighting issue. And I think this is, my interpretation is that this is an attempt to move us that direction, because what they said to us was, not only did it outline the issue comprehensively, but it actually provided recommendations rather than just sending a letter or resolution. So I think that's kind of the genesis behind all that for the folks who weren't here in December. The op-eds is obviously a way to communicate.
Sure. Actually, can I just go to Frank, because he's having a chance to speak yet?
I think this is a great idea. I think it's good for our public profile, as well as for getting more interaction, especially if it's posted on a blog, more interaction with the public. I was glad to hear that this has already been approved by the editors of the organization that's going to publish it. I do see one little monkey wrench down the road, is that we may approve something, submit it, and it gets substantially edited. You know, we're not posting on our own, you know, it's going to be vetted by a thing. Now, I am perfectly happy with allowing the leadership team to make those judgment calls after it's approved, but I think we do have to be aware of that eventuality, and especially if we're looking at multiple places to publish things.
That's a good point. Thank you. Patricia, I'll come back to you in just a second.
My concern is, quick. I hadn't thought about that. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. If they edit it and we don't get to see it before it's edited, are we liable? We being the RAC council members that were responsible for putting that out. It is an excellent idea, but I hadn't thought of that. Is there any liability? I guess that's what for us or Metro.
Right. I mean, we can speak as the RAC for ourselves. That's why we're approving it, and that's why I brought it as something that had already been edited. So in this case, you wouldn't see any changes because we're voting on the final version that's already been agreed to with them.
So what we approve here as the RAC Council
is what would be published.
Okay.
Correct. But I think that's an excellent point, something to keep in mind for future ventures here.
Right.
That we would have to bring a finished, fully edited product to the RAC for approval.
Right. But I think that in those, you know, in any publishing venture, if the editors want to substantially alter it, they would let you know that, you know, let the submitter know that. And I guess what I'm saying is I think that the RAC should empower the leadership team to make those judgment calls once we've approved it. You know, once we've approved it, it may go through another vetting process and, you know, it's our options are either to give you the authority to make those judgment calls or to bring it back another month and relook at it again, which I think is silly.
That sounds suspiciously like a motion that you're putting forward. Is that the case?
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
But wait a minute. Okay. I'm hearing something different here. So you've got to enlighten me.
Sure. So the motion.
I'll make a motion.
Yeah, please make a motion.
I move that the RAC empower the leadership team to make judgment calls on editing of any op-eds that we submit.
Okay, including the one that's currently on the table,
right.
I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
No.
All right.
No.
That's seconded? All right, so we're debating the amendment now.
You can't do that. That's
would you like to speak? John, can we turn on the timer, by the way?
I just think the motion as it stands, it's too vague because editing, what we're talking is about outside editing,
right.
Not within us.
Right.
And that's what has to be specified
right.
in that motion. That it's outside editing that we're concerned about.
Exactly.
Right. Well, I think what Frank has moved, and correct me if I'm wrong here, is that the leadership team be empowered to accept or reject any edits that come after the RAC
yeah.
has approved it. Am I correct there?
Oh, okay. Wait.
Any further debate on the amendment?
Yes.
Yes.
Wait a minute.
Tasted.
Okay. So I'm getting two different things here, and maybe I'm just not quite understanding it. What I asked was, once this goes to Greater Washington, whoever it is that's going to publish it and make it a link, I think it's an excellent idea. That it will, now my thought was that it will be the final version unedited, but now what I'm hearing is that we're going to give the leadership team permission to give this, or whoever it is that does this publisher's link, to make edits, so I'm not understanding.
That's the amendment that's on the floor right now.
Okay.
So the original motion is that we publish it as public, or publish it as done
right,
here.
Final form, right.
Frank has amended that to say that we would allow the leadership team to accept or reject any edits that come after the RAC is approved. So that's what we're debating right now.
I'm not comfortable.
Sorry, I should go back to Candace there. She's
no.
been waiting for a while.
I think that, well, yeah, well, now that we're on to a whole different debate, for the most part, I wasn't saying in the beginning that we shouldn't be doing things like this and publishing articles like this or op-eds. I think that we should definitely do that. I think that my concern was basically the concern that's now being brought up is who has the final say on what goes out. We operate as a group.
Right.
We have to sort of go into this final product as a group.
Right.
And other, because essentially, it's each and every single one of our names on it.
Exactly.
We're the RAC, so that's
right.
that's the way it has to operate. So what we're seeing today, you're telling me, except for maybe grammatical edits, you know, is basically what's going to be in the Greater Washington op-ed, then, hey, I have
right.
no problem with it. But if it's something more substantive, then I think that we have to know about that
right.
because it's each and every single one of our names on it.
Thank you.
Thank you. I concur.
Carl?
I think the issue we're debating here is important, and I think the question is an important one of who can edit our work, and that is a question that does not need to be raised if we have our own vehicle for distributing information. For instance, a blog where if one of the committees does something, we can put something up, and then people can link to it all I want, and we don't have to worry about this question of who is editing our work and this and that. Now, I realize that is a much larger discussion than probably we've planned to have tonight because, as we know, blogs left untended, like good gardens, grow awry and are forgotten and fields turn fallow and all that. So I think there's a bigger question on the work required for that. I think there's a question with getting an official buy-in from the board from the perspective of, you know, we want the RAC to be more communicative with the public. Those are questions I don't know that we're prepared to answer tonight, but it would seem that creating our own vehicle for communicating things would get around the problem of who is editing our work. And I agree with Candace, a comma can change a lot. Don't know that that is something we should decide tonight, but it is something I think the leadership team might want to discuss because it would seem to be a way around this problem of who is editing our work and what control we have over what we produce.
Thank you. Alex?
I think I have a broad question about how we're going about choosing who we're publishing our statements with, and I actually very much agree with what Carl just said in that, you know, the more sensible thing, I think, to me is to say, okay, let's publish this on our website, maybe on our Twitter feed. It's really easy to put up a Twitter feed nowadays, and whoever wants to link to it can do so very easily, and just say, here's their statement. That way we have full editorial control. Barring that, I think it's much too cumbersome to have 20 people deciding on editorial changes to a document. I think we should empower some sort of leadership team with final editorial say, and perhaps if somebody has a problem with what was ultimately published, they could bring that up at the next meeting and we could move forward with potentially replacing whoever is elected as the editor or whatever. But I do really wonder broadly how we're choosing where we're publishing our statements or what. I mean, I'd never heard of the Greater Washington until you mentioned it in your email, so that's fine. It seems like a very nice blog, but why them?
Fine question. Patrick?
I had somewhat of a process question that's in the same vein as Alex and Carl here. When we talk about an op-ed, are we talking about an opinion piece that we are publishing and we are putting our names on as the rec, or are we talking about an editorial that we are perhaps working with an editorial board or editors so that it is their thoughts on what we're doing? Because the two things are different. And by publishing an opinion piece that appears under our byline, I think we do accomplish a lot of what Alex and Carl are thinking about, in that we retain the editorial control. The editorial outlets then just deem our submission worthy of printing or not worthy of printing. And so what we're, I guess my only issue with this is that we have turned over editorial control, or presumably turned over editorial control, to somebody outside of this room. And so whether they are changing it to sound the way that their readers like to consume it, or, you know, whatever motives, good or bad, I'm concerned about that ceding of control. And so I think by submitting opinion pieces rather than, you know, this idea of giving to somebody, letting them end it, give it back, and then we've got to come to a consensus about what that says, it may be easier to instead go the opinion piece route. But that's just a thought that I'm throwing out there.
And just to clarify, this is an opinion piece.
Thanks. Well, I get to do wrap up. Alex and Carl actually made quite a few of the points that I was going to make, so I guess I'll weigh in support of a lot of what they said. One thing I would hate to do, and I think it was an early frustration for me when I first started here, is we got too process-oriented. I really enjoyed the first part of this meeting where we gave suggestions and really in our opinions, and I think that helps us represent constituencies and give information to Metro a lot more than talking about how we edit an editorial. That being said, the solutions that were offered are great. I love the idea of us, when we are in unison, offering up an opinion piece. I used to be in journalism, so I know that editors ultimately will edit your work, and even when you submit, they often have a number of words to have content. I can't even imagine us debating every piece of information that comes out. You can't write by committee. But if we do have a nice piece like this that is thorough and that we offer up on our own forum or and send it out in its entirety, then it's up to the different blogs or editors or however to condense it and communicate. And then we can argue with them if they communicated it properly. But I do like the solutions that were offered. And I would oppose us spending time on each agenda editing a piece. I just don't think that's a good use of our time.
Okay, thank you. Marianne?
Part of my reason for making comments on this is I did not understand we were looking at a final document.
Right.
If I had known I thought this was a draft, I agree this is not the place to make edits, but that before something went in, we would have a chance to provide to whoever was responsible for final editing to do that. And that's what I'm looking for, not to manage by committee.
Okay. Patricia?
Same, I concur.
So you had your...
She did just answer my... Thank you.
Okay. So we have a motion on the floor, an amended motion. The amendment that we're currently considering is Frank's amendment that we empower the leadership team to adjudicate any edits to what comes to this and further other documents. Any motions on that amendment?
Call the question.
Thank you. Second? Anybody? Second? All right, so we're going to vote to close debate on the amendment. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Okay, so we've closed a debate on the amendment. Yes?
I abstain.
Oh, you abstain?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I only saw or heard a few people say aye.
All right, let's raise our hands then on the motion to close. All right. On the motion to close debate on Frank's amendment, could everybody who approves of that raise your hands, please? So we're not, that would mean that we're not voting on the actual amendment yet. We're just voting to close debate on the amendment so we can have a vote. All right.
And
yes, you managed to close debate. Any opposed? Abstentions? Thank you. All right, now we are voting on the actual amendment, and that is to empower the leadership team to approve or disapprove of any edits that go forward after the op-ed is published. So, all in favor of this amendment, please raise your hands.
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
All opposed?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Any abstentions?
No, I abstain because I feel like I'm the subject of this all.
Okay. All right, so the motion passes.
Could I just get a division on that so I can?
It was 9-8.
Okay, but who and who?
Who's I? Let's do it again. I'll let you know after you get to it.
Should we, let's go around the room and you can vote that way.
Pat, were you in favor?
No, he was opposed. Pat or Sheen, yes.
Okay.
No.
Okay, then was anybody in the leadership in favor?
No. I'm abstaining because I'm the chair.
I'm opposed.
She's opposed. Barbara abstained. All right. So that motion passes.
Okay.
Now we're back to debate on the main measure, which is to approve or disapprove of publishing the op-eds. Yes, Alex.
Maybe, I don't, again, I'm not sure about, I wish I'd come 15 minutes earlier. maybe if I could make a motion, maybe two motions actually. First motion would be to make a, when we publish these types of documents, to allow for a quick moment for panel members to raise any concerns that they have with the published documents and the editing process in the subsequent meeting. That would be one. And the other would be to, rather than publish this online, rather than publish this directly to whatever blog, to put it on, I'm sure we have a website or a Twitter feed that is our own and allow for people to link to it rather than giving it directly to them.
All right, so the two motions you've got there are to, for input from the council before.
We can only do one motion at a time.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying we're going to do these motions after we vote on this one, but I just want to keep an idea of what you're moving here. So the first one, if I'm not putting too many words in your mouth, is to allow feedback on the op-eds before they come for a vote.
Yes.
Okay?
No, after they come for a vote.
File minority dissenting opinion.
Exactly.
At the next meeting.
Yep. Thanks.
Okay. And the second motion was? Sorry. To publish it on our own website. Okay. All right. Since those are two motions that are not specifically germane to the one that we're considering now, we're going to do those after the motion that we've got on the floor right now. But I'm going to note those down, so we'll vote on those afterwards. Any further debate on the question about whether to publish these op-eds? Yes.
I guess I don't understand sort of how this came about that we were going to be publishing these op-eds and who exactly worked on this. Like basically, like for example, when I did law review, you have like a president, you have a vice president, you have people that work doing editing and things like that. So you have a committee of people. I fully understand the need for a committee, but in this instance, leading up to us publishing these op-eds, who made up the committee?
The leadership team.
Okay. And so going forward, who's...
Who made up the committee? To write this?
Yes.
Okay. I wrote them.
Okay.
And then I circulated to the leadership team who offered edits.
Okay. So if we're going to, one, publish this as an op-ed and publish additional things in the future, I definitely agree that we need a committee that's comprised of people who are not just the leadership board so that we can have input from each of the jurisdictions before things are published. I guess I have an issue when it comes to my name being on something and basically what I'm getting is supposedly the final product. And really, we're just going to vote. Tonight we're saying, okay, let's vote on it. If we get enough yays, it's going to be published tomorrow. That's essentially what's going to happen here. So I guess what I'm saying is the way in which this came about, I don't think was maybe the best way to go about it.
All right. Thank you. Yep. Barbara.
I just want to clarify that I don't think any of us were proposing this as a model for how we do them in general. Mm-hmm. It was that coincidentally, he had done this before he was even on the leadership team. He had been a part of this committee
right.
and had done this. And he had written it, and he shared it with us. Mm-hmm. And I made the motion, so which can be voted down. But I think the intent was that different people will each, volunteer to say, I'd like to do this one. And this is not how we are trying to declare it to be. We just said this is how it happened for the first time. As a suggestion of what we do and how.
No, and I definitely think we need to publish things because we need to interact more with the public. I just think there's a better way to go about it.
Karen?
Right, I just have a quick question because it's my understanding that this document was provided to the council in advance, so we all had an opportunity to review it, if I'm not mistaken. Because
a couple of days ago, if I remember correctly.
But we had an opportunity to review it. So I'm not
for someone with a busy schedule.
But I don't think
Keep going.
I just want to understand what the process is. I thought it was fine, quite honestly, but I thought I had enough time to review the document. But it just seems as if several of the council members are surprised as if it's the first time reviewing this document. So for me, I'm trying to understand really what the issue is.
Thank you. Fred?
So minimally, did all the people who worked on the committee sign off on the report?
Some of the people who are on the committee are no longer on the RAC. So
is there anybody on the RAC who signed off on the report but you?
The members of the leadership team.
So they were on the committee that did all this investigation?
No, they were not.
Airport committee. I was not on the airport.
Right. So that's what I'm trying to understand. It's like, so who's...
Who are the members of the airport?
Who is the Air Airport committee that wrote this and agreed everything in here? Because you're asking me to vote, yeah, this is okay, and I don't know who actually vetted all this stuff.
Right. Well, in terms of people who attended the meetings, it was me, it was Frank, it was Kelsey, who was on the RAC previously, it was Joseph Kitchen, who was on the RAC previously.
So they read the report before tonight?
Yes.
And they were all, you're all okay with it?
The report, not the op-ed.
Right. And as a member of the leadership team, we had gotten this in draft. I'm sorry. I had read the report and made comments back to Ben in a role as a RAC member, going back to the chair of the working group, the airport's working group.
Any other debate? Yes.
For clarification, I'm catching.
catch-22 here. I'm going to piggyback off what Candace said, and so that, I'm sorry, what's your name?
Karen.
My concern is that our names are on here. I think it's an excellent idea. I think it's good, but I have to agree that I didn't know the op-ed was going to go out, in all honesty. And I think if we're going to do that, I think it's a good idea, but I think we need to do it under WMATA. I mean, as far as putting out there versus Greater Washington.
Okay.
That's my main concern.
Are you saying both or one or the other?
I'm saying WMATA.
Okay.
If we're going to put op-eds under the rack, because that's who we're basically, we're here for our constituents, but on the other hand, for recommendations for the Metro Board, that's who we represent ultimately at the end of the day. So if there are any liabilities, I don't know, I'm not an attorney, but it just seems too open. If there are going to be edits, I'm saying it's fine to have the leadership approve it if it's going through WMATA. Does that make sense to you? That's my only concern, because my name is going to be lent to it because it's going to say the RAC.
So is that a motion to publish it?
No, there's a motion coming up, according to Alex, and I think that's the area that I'm going to lend it to.
Okay. But you realize that if we approve the motion as is, that it would be published on Greater Washington, then if we approve his one later, then it would be published on the website also. So if you want to do not publishing it on Greater Washington, it would be better to amend the current motion.
Sorry.
That's what I'm saying.
Thank you. My Robert's rule manners are showing up here. I'd like to amend the motion that if it's published, to publish it with the approval of the full RAC Council, let them review it at least one more time, because I did not understand that this was going to be published, but have it published through WMATA, and if there are any ultimate revisions after it's been approved by the full RAC Council, then that the leadership should have, because we shouldn't be passing this back and forth once we've approved it.
All right, so your amendment is that we publish it on the WMATA website,
and
that everybody has a chance to chime in, but then the leadership team would make the ultimate decision about when to publish.
Right.
Okay. That is the amendment on the floor. Is there a second?
I'd like to make a motion to read the papers. I don't understand what that
is. Okay. Thank you. Excellent motion. Excellent use of Robert's rule right there. So the motion, the amendment to the motion is that we not publish it on the Greater Washington website, that we only publish it on the WMATA website, and that it would be circulated one more time to everybody on the RAC with a certain time for giving further comments, and then the leadership team, after that time is over, would make a decision about when to publish it on the WMATA website only. Is there a second?
I would second that.
Second. Any debate on that amendment? Carl.
I don't know the appropriate vehicle for this, but based on the discussion, it seems apparent that is there a way to make a motion to defer this entire discussion until next month?
Exactly that.
You can lay it on the table.
Okay, I would like to lay it on the table and make a motion to defer this discussion until next month, on the specific publishing of this op-ed and report, and...
Well, we've already voted on the report, so that you're too late on that one.
Oh, right, sorry. On defer till next month, this discussion, pending the, on both this specific report and pending a discussion between the leadership team, board, and WMATA staff on vehicles for the RAC delivery of future efforts. Because we're saying we want to publish it on our website. Newsflash, we don't have a page to do that right now, so it would seem that we should put the horse before the cart and make sure that we have the vehicles in place before we decide to go and publish things on a website that doesn't exist.
All right.
That's my motion.
All right. Well, your motion sounds like it's a motion on the main one, but we have an amendment on the floor right now that we need to take care of before we can deal with that motion. There was a second. Alex seconded that motion. So we're now debating the motion about publishing it on the WMATA website.
I'd like to move to close debate.
All right. Motion to close debate. Is there a second on that?
Second.
All right. So now we're moving to close debate on Patricia's amendment. Patricia's amendment is to publish it on the WMATA website and give the leadership team authority after it's been circulated to publish it on the WMATA website. You can ask, yes, a question of order, yes.
So how are you considering the other motion to table?
We're going to consider the motion to table after this because it pertains to the main motion on the floor, not the amendment. So we need to deal with the amendment first, and then we can deal with that. Okay? All right, so all in favor of closing debate on that amendment, please say aye or raise your hands. All right, all opposed? Abstentions? Okay, motion to close debate passes. Now we're going to vote on the amendment itself. All in favor, raise your hand.
We are voting on
the amendment. Yes, the amendment is to publish it on the WMATA website after the leadership team has circulated it to everybody, and then they would have the ability to publish it on the website. All in favor of that amendment, please raise your hands. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. All opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Any abstentions? 1, 2, 3. Okay, that motion fails.
Okay.
Now we will consider Carl's motion to lay the question, or actually to postpone the question for a certain time, that being next month.
Postpone the question on publishing this op-ed until next month. And on the condition that in the intermediary month, the RAC leadership team has a discussion with the board and staff in a collaborative manner about ways we can do outreach with a website.
Okay. No, it is debatable. Oh, right.
I mean, blog posts. I mean,
yes.
Let's try to keep this constrained.
Okay.
Here we go.
So we are now going to move to a vote about whether to lay it on the table as Carl has described. Everyone clear on what we're voting on?
Yeah.
Does somebody need to second Carl's motion?
I seconded it.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All in favor of laying this on the table until the next meeting, please raise your hands. 1, 2, 3. Looks like everybody. All opposed. Karen? I will abstain. Any other abstentions? All right. That motion passes. So that motion is laid on the table until our next meeting. Next on the any public comment on that? I'm sorry I didn't. You please remind me when I miss you.
Ben, I would love to have a lengthy chat with you after about this, but my very brief recommendation is that this smells like a backroom deal between you and David Alpert. And David Alpert's not a journalist. He's a former software engineer. And Greater Washington's a blog. Second, I don't know how many of you deal with the media, but thank you. They always reserve editorial control. Never hand anything over to a journalist that you don't want them to edit. You will not get it back for changes. They will run it. They will run it without showing it to you. And Ben, just yank this entire thing, because you wrote it, yank the entire thing, run it on Greater Washington under your own name with a disclaimer that says that you're not speaking for the RAC, because David Alpert did that all the time when he sat on the RAC and was first getting Greater Washington off the ground. All the time. I mean, he had a running thing about it, and the RAC back then let him. So, I mean, that seems to be part of the problem, is this whole committee thing. Drafting things by committee is a disaster. I mean, it's a serious disaster, and this is a committee of 21. Trying to do it with 5 people is a nightmare. I mean, 21 is impossible. Pick someone, and, you can do it as a private citizen with a disclaimer. There's nothing in the RAC bylaws that stops you from doing that. Frank has spoken to the media and said, I'm not speaking for the RAC. I'm speaking as Frank DiBernardo, private citizen. That fixes the problem and doesn't waste the words you've already written.
Thank you. Any other public comments?
What he said. Real easy to create a website if you don't want to go on Wattmoss. It's real easy to link it to your Twitter feeds and your Facebook, or even have a Facebook page, which is free, and to post your blogs, your opinion pieces, whatever. I don't think you need to go through the media, the traditional media, unless there's a big, big, big thing. But, you know, if you guys use social media, you gather followers, tweet, Facebook, forward, you got it. It's problem solved. Good luck.
Thank you. Any other public comments? Okay. That took longer than expected. Media moment, just very quickly. One thing that has been raised since the last RAC meeting is discussing things with the media. Now, members of the media have asked for our contact information, and those who have been interested in that have provided their information to John. That list is still open. If you have decided that you want or do not want, if you are reconsidering, you can change that at any time. One thing that we've just been asked by WMATA staff is, if you do talk to the media, if someone calls you, asks for a statement, that you just give John and preferably the leadership team as well a heads up that you have talked to the media. Say whatever you like. You are free to talk. But recognize that what you say in front of the media does have an impact on WMATA, because, and it has an impact on the rest of us as well. As we've all discussed here, you know, when you say something for the RAC, it has all of our names on it. So again, you're free to speak as you like, but please just give us a heads up that that has happened. Any further?
Can you define what media is? If it's a community, newspaper or any form of published?
Yeah, any form of published media. Again, it's just a heads up. A one sentence email will do it. I talked to such and such outlet on this topic. That's enough.
So,
yes. I don't think so, personally.
Right. So you speak on behalf of the RAC for RAC policy and statements and positions, right?
I'm not sure that even I'd be comfortable doing that. I would probably say that I am a RAC member, but I personally would not speak on behalf of the RAC unless I came to you guys and said, this is what I would say. That's just me. I don't feel comfortable speaking for all of you. In that sense.
If the RAC has a position and the media has asked what is the RAC's opinion on this, then
that would be something
you
different.
Be able to speak.
Yeah, in that sense, in that case, I would feel comfortable. If we've already agreed on the position, then yes, explaining that, I would feel comfortable
but
with that.
I wouldn't want to, I mean, if they said, what does the RAC think about this, I would defer to you.
Right.
That's your job.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's my opinion. I don't know how anyone else thinks.
Fair enough. Frank?
Yeah. I agree with what Patrick said. I would just add also the proviso that more than likely, and this is acceptable, both I think from a journalistic point of view and from, you know, our bylaws point of view, is that you can speak to the media and be identified as a RAC member, even though you're not speaking for the RAC.
Also true.
You know, that being identified as a RAC member is an acceptable.
Okay. Any other comments? Comments from the public?
Article 7, Section 2 of the RAC bylaws, I'd be happy to read it in the record if you have done so. Otherwise, that answers all the questions that just got asked.
All right. Okay. Thank you. Now, the committee structure and the work plan. Madam Carter, or Walker, I'm sorry.
You all have made me afraid, very afraid. Anyway, most of this is nothing new. The first document that I'm going to refer to is on page 21 of the agenda handouts, and that is something we've discussed most recently at the January meeting, but discussed in previous meetings, and that is going to a standing subcommittee structure to be more efficient and effective in doing our jobs. And I'm going to make this very brief because you all can read. basically the three committees that we were suggesting, and this is based on comments from you all at the meeting or comments subsequently at the email, were safety and security, which would include both personal and incident, fares, budget, finance, capital improvements, and long-range planning. I know that's a mouthful. And operations, communications, customer service, including public participation. The committees would meet on the second or third Wednesday of each month from 6:30 to probably 8, and I should have corrected that, a 90-minute meeting. Each member would be expected to serve on at least one standing subcommittee. You could attend all, you could be a member of one, of more than one, as long as there were no conflicts in terms of meeting times. And in terms of governance, I've extracted the article which governs the setting up of the committees and special committees and at the bottom of the page. That is essentially it. And in a way, what we basically did when the leadership team met was to look at, I think, a draft that Carl Seip had written, and which we tried to crosswalk the committee setup of WMATA's board with the topics that we came up with, topics for the standing subcommittee or the headings for the standing subcommittee. So that's how we arrived at that. You want me to go on with the second document? Or do you want to...
The
work plan? Or do you want to just deal with the committee structure first?
Let's deal with that first.
Okay.
So you're moving that?
Right. I move that we accept the standing subcommittee structure as outlined on page 21 of the agenda.
Second.
All right. That motion's open for debate. Carl.
I think most people know that I'm in favor, considering our time constraints, of adding meetings. I have a question and a concern. The first question is, you're proposing two subcommittee meeting dates, but three subcommittees, and two standing subcommittees will meet concurrently. So by my reading, there are four slots for subcommittees to meet. Two on each day. What's the fourth subcommittee?
The governance subcommittee.
We removed that, but what we decided is these were such big chunks of work that we decided the leadership team would be a committee of the whole for two areas. First, governance, whether that was internal or external, and secondly, that the leadership team would provide liaison to the Accessibility Advisory Committee. So we would perhaps use that fourth slot if necessary, or when, if and as necessary, for that meeting. Meetings on those two topics.
My comment that I would put on the table, or I shouldn't use that terminology because it might imply that I'm making a motion. My comment that I put on the table in front of everyone is that my concern with concurrent subcommittee meetings on the same night is that it constrains the ability of the public to attend one or the other, and it constrains the ability of a RAC member to attend both if topics are of interest. I definitely think that we should do everything we can to not spread out and have 15 meeting dates, you know, over the course of the month. But with concurrent meetings, if there are major issues in two subcommittees that are important to the public and important to RAC members, they will not be able to attend both. So I guess I would put that before folks and suggest some sort of resolution to that.
Can I make a suggestion in the interest of time? How many people feel that we should have separate time slots? So that everybody, okay. So can we adopt that as a friendly amendment to say that we will have separate time slots to sort of decouple standing subcommittees? Okay, so
that's,
we don't have.
Why don't
I make an amendment to strike the line, two standing subcommittees will meet concurrently on each date, and replace it with no subcommittees will meet concurrently to allow for the participation of the public and all RAC members.
Okay.
If they so choose.
Is there a second?
I second that.
Second. All right. Any debate on that amendment? Any motion?
Move to close debate.
Is there Is there a second on that motion to close debate?
Second.
Okay. We're now going to vote on whether to close debate on that amendment. All in favor of closing debate, raise your hands. All opposed? That passes. So now we're going to vote on that amendment. All in favor of that amendment? All opposed? One, two, three, four, five opposed. Any abstentions? Two abstentions. Okay, that amendment passes. So now we're back to debate on the main motion on the floor as amended. Any further debate?
Call the question.
All right, is there a second for closing debate?
I don't know, but do you want to get comment?
Any public comment, I'm sorry. We'll deal with that in just a second. Any public comment on this? Yep.
I'll get better, I
promise. I'm just wondering why, maybe I'll just ask, but why wouldn't we just have three separate times, three separate dates, for second Wednesday, third Wednesday, fourth Wednesday of every month?
I mean, that's what we just voted on.
Yeah, but
just to prove that.
Why did we not do that? Because we were trying at first to try to give somebody a Wednesday off. But
All right.
Yeah, the whole concurrent meeting thing makes me very uncomfortable, just as from the perspective of transparency. Not that I necessarily intend to make all of them, but I don't see how anybody can reasonably cover four meetings a month where two of them are being held on the same day. Also, Ben, not to throw salt in the wound, but David Alpert just told me on Twitter that he had intended that these were going to run under your byline, not as an official statement of the RAC.
I would have changed that, obviously. The way they have it set up on their site is that it has somebody's name as an account. So I was going to go to him and change that. Any further debate on the motion on the floor? Yes.
For the those of us that, I mean, I of course, we do need to have standing committees. I agree with that. I've asked for it before, additional time, some kind of subcommittees, because we're not getting a lot done. Even though we say we're going to meet once a month, it's not enough time. My only question is that when I signed on or was appointed as a RAC member, it was my understanding there are different meanings as far as mandatory meetings. Now, if we do not attend or are not able to attend these subcommittee meetings, where does that stand?
In terms of? Standing on the RAC?
Exactly. Thank you, Ben.
That's an open question. I think that's something that the leadership team has not yet addressed.
Okay.
Is it in the bylaws?
We talked about it, though, too. I think that there was an expectation you would make one.
That was something
I believe
that we
it was discussed.
That was something that we have discussed at a previous meeting.
Can I point of information?
There is no point of information.
Point of saying something.
If you'd like to continue debate, yes, you may continue.
In answer to your question, if you're only looking at attending two meetings per month, even though we're going to have four, right? The way the attendance policy is structured in the bylaws, you can miss half of your meeting. John, correct me if I'm wrong. Half of your meetings over 6 months and still be fine. So if you can still only attend every single one of the main full RAC meetings, but you cannot attend any subcommittee meetings because you don't believe in the subcommittee process or what have you, even if you don't attend any of them, you'll still be fine in the eyes of the bylaws. Now, I think most of us would agree that we should amend the bylaws so that it more appropriately reflects the new subcommittee process and attendance expectations. But from a straight-up standpoint right now, there's a lot of leeway in the bylaws is what I'm trying to say.
Yes, I have commitments.
Just for everyone's edification, I'm going to read the attendance part. Is a member of the appointment of the council shall be terminated upon an affirmative determination that a member has attended no regular meetings for three consecutive months or has missed two-thirds of regular meetings within a six-month period.
All right. So subcommittees or committees as a whole are not mentioned in the bylaws currently. Maybe that's something that we'll have to consider. Thank you for raising that. Candace?
I just have a
I'm sorry. No, no, thank you. Thank you for letting me know.
Passed over a bit.
Okay. No, thank you for that.
I just have a quick question. Do these meetings have to be scheduled on Wednesdays, or is there any leeway there? Or can we change it once we're on a subcommittee?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes. Sorry.
That's
I'll look
okay.
in your direction more often. No, no, please call me out on that.
I'm an assertive woman. No, I was only going to mention, I mean, I do certainly understand people's desire to do as much as possible as their time allows. I do want, but I voted against tinkering with having, we have a limited number of staff, having staff give up that many evenings in a month necessarily that are going to have to be assigned to us. Because subcommittees, by their design, are supposed to do the work of the bring work back to the full committee, and everybody is before any decision is made is going to be able to be briefed on it. This is to allow certain people to become subject matter experts in on an item, and then bring it back to us after doing that research. And in theory, the other people become subject matter experts on something else. And then the next year, if you're done with that topic, move to the other subcommittee and kind of become that subject matter expert. I think it would be, if we all start attending everything, it's going to become 4 RAC meetings a month. It's just, I think it's good. They're going to bring it back. It's all going to be discussed twice after being vetted and the real work being done.
Carol?
Oh, I just wanted to say that if this passes, I put sign-up sheets, and I just went over and did a fourth Wednesday so people can put in yes, no, and I'm thinking that in the interest of time, we don't have to decide which Wednesday or anything else we're going to meet. And to answer someone's questions about why Wednesday, if it turns out that a significant number of people who want to sign up for a specific committee can't meet on any Wednesday, I think we'd have to then look at some other dates. And as John had pointed out to us earlier, the availability of rooms is an issue.
Monday,
I know.
Alex.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think the idea with having these subcommittees is to make them as sort of working committees. I don't think there's any necessary reason why we need to make them part of any mandatory attendance process according to the bylaws. I would suggest that people just look at it as an opportunity. If you have time, come to the meetings, do the work, and we bring it back to the greater committee to have everybody vote on it. But it's an opportunity if you have time, not if you don't. You don't, that's it. But that's the idea. Get some more work done, which is great for everybody. So,
Mary Ann?
Actually, I disagree with that. I think setting up committees, subcommittees is very important. I think we should know who are the official subcommittee members. If other people want to show up, great. But so that you know who is going to be there and how you get something done to bring back to the rest of us.
Frank?
I also think that we have to remember that these, as working committees, these meetings are going to have staff presentations and where input is going to be, where there's going to be the opportunities for interaction with staff members that traditionally we had here that ate up so much of our time. So I think it's going to be, we're going to want to go to the staff, to the committee meetings. And I think it's going to be not attending the committee meetings is going to put RAC members at a disadvantage when we come to the full meeting to discuss these things, so that we don't have to rehash everything that happened at the committee meeting.
I think we have so many forms of way that we can meet, other than physically actually meeting at one of these standing committees. And I don't, you said you have written here on the membership that each member is expected to serve, and I would want that actually removed, because this is a lot. We've already, committed always over 2 hours on this Wednesday, and to add a standing subcommittee where we have to attend or expected to attend, I think that's put too much pressure. And it should be other ways. We all communicate. We have everybody's email. If there's a working committee, if there's something on the Operations Communications Standing Committee, that it can circulate, that subcommittee can vote on it or whatever without dedicating another Wednesday or another 90 minutes or another 2 hours. So I'm not.
All right. Since we're already at 8:33 right now, is anybody going to get a motion to close debate? I would.
Well, did you just offer an amendment?
Well, actually, I'd offer an amendment, amending the amendment. Is this on this one, on that line under the membership? Yes.
Yes.
That we strike that each RAC member is expected to serve on one of the committees. It's expected. So I don't know if expected meaning expected to attend or expected to serve or.
So your amendment is sorry. Can you show me
under
that?
Membership, page 21 of 31.
It says serve, not attend.
Expected to serve, or I came, so.
So your amendment is?
As long as, okay, you volunteer.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It doesn't mean you have to attend.
Okay, that's the distinction. Can we just make that distinction between attending, serving, volunteering?
So you're.
Yeah, so, yeah. I thought we said it was not in the bylaws at all. Do we want to amend the bylaws that we will have to serve on one of these standing committees?
That's another discussion that
okay.
I think we can have at another time if that's okay with you.
Yes.
Okay. I see where you're going with that, but that's a separate discussion from this motion. Yeah. All right.
Second motion.
All right. Thank you very much. All in favor of closing debate on this motion, please raise your hands.
Yes.
Okay. All right. All in favor of closing debate, please raise your hands. All opposed? Any abstentions? All right, debate is closed on the motion. We'll now move to a vote on the motion. All in favor, please raise your hands.
The motion.
Okay, the motion is to approve the subcommittee structure as outlined on page 21, as amended by Carl's previous amendment, that no two meetings will meet on the same day. All in favor, please raise your hands. All opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
So unclear, Carl's amendment was that no two committees would be at the same time.
Oh.
Correct.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
Not on the same day. They might be able to meet on the same day.
Same day, yes, but not at the same time.
All right.
Yes.
Thank you for the
clarification.
Right, they're not going to
meet
concurrently.
All right. That motion passes.
No objections.
There were no objections. It was unanimous. Now we have this work plan, but we don't. I'm hearing from Carol that she's not going to move that we really approve that because these are mostly just topics of discussion for the subcommittees, really. So we've already seen these. The subcommittees will deal with that. Okay. So that part of our agenda is concluded. Any announcements before I entertain a motion to adjourn? Yes, Carol, please.
I would like to suggest a round of applause to our dutiful John, our secretary, who can, I know being a past secretary for something, it can be quite frustrating trying to keep up with all the conversation. So.
And whose work we just quadrupled with the subcommittee plan.
Indeed. Any other announcements?
I have one announcement.
Yes, please.
The D.C. Department of Transportation is holding a workshop this Saturday.
Yeah.
I got an invitation to serve on one of their advisory committees, and I'll forward that information to all RAC members. I don't know if it was a conflict. John, would it be a conflict?
What?
I sent
you. To go to a D.D. meeting?
No, to, yeah, okay, yeah, so. And I think it would be good because it's something that's a strategic plan that the D.C. Department of Transportation has a lot of funding that they're involved in, and I think it would be good for us.
There's also going to be a public meeting on transportation corridors between Union Station and Georgetown.
At Martin Luther King Library, I'm sorry.
Yes, yes. This other one's going to be at the National Association for the Advancement of Science, which is quite close to here. I'll forward that around to everybody as well. Carol, any announcements?
Yeah, and there's going to be a hearing. I think there was one tonight just before this meeting, but there's going to be another one on tomorrow about the number 80 line. I can't remember for the moment where it is. The second thing is to please sign up on one of those sign-up sheets for one of the standing subcommittees on which you're asked to serve.
All right. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
So moved. Seconded? All in favor of adjourning? All opposed? We are adjourned.